Welcome to Pro Mindset 2024 NFL Draft Week. This is your host, Craig Doman. I am going to talk today from my 3 decades of experience in representing guys getting ready for the NFL Draft. It is absolutely the biggest, most impactful, most revealing weekend for a NFL prospect's life, not just their career. Because they're going to get a phone call, they're going to get told where they're going to go. They're going to find out how much they're going to make, what city they're going to play in, who's going to be their coach. They find out when they show up, the scheme they're going to play, the role they drafted them for, the competition they're going to compete against, the players they got to beat out. And I think the first thing that settles in once they show up is there's no redshirting. We've got 90 guys in camp, 53 guys get to be on the active roster at the beginning of the season, 46 get to dress. But let's go back to draft weekend. Draft weekend is the consummation for all these young men of, in some cases, 15, 16, 17 years of playing football, competing in sports. And many of these guys have had the dream of playing in the NFL since the second, third, fourth grade. And now it's here. This weekend for the draft eligible guys for 2024. So what I'm going to talk about today is a handful of things that perhaps the media doesn't talk about. What does the media talk about? They talk about potential trades in the first round. They talk about who are the teams that got to get a quarterback and who are the likely candidates to be drafted as quarterbacks in the first round? Who are the teams that might think ahead and draft a quarterback and surprise people because they're not desperate for a quarterback at the moment, but they want to do what Green Bay did with Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay did with Jordan Love, what Kansas City did with Patrick Mahomes, where they had a good quarterback and they drafted a quarterback that could sit on the sidelines for a season or two or three and learn the game. The media also doesn't talk about what really goes on in the conversations between agents and players, what goes on in the living rooms for those players that are hanging out at home with their family and friends and some teammates from college. What does that look like? Especially, I mean, it's easy when a guy gets drafted higher than he thought he was going to get drafted. Phone rings, head coach, general managers on the other end of the phone. And usually it's something like, hey, man, this is so-and-so with such and such team. How would you like to be a Bengal or a Bear or Niner? And of course, the player's going to say, hell yeah, man, I'm in. Those are the easy ones. Sometimes on national TV, and that's why the NFL only has 13 players come into the Detroit on Thursday night, because they want to avoid the embarrassment of somebody sliding and perhaps not even getting drafted in the first round. That's why there's only 3 quarterbacks going to be there on Thursday night. Those 3 quarterbacks will be drafted in the first round. But if they drafted the 6 quarterbacks that could, or if they invited the 6 quarterbacks that could be drafted in the first round, there's a possibility 1 or 2 of them are still sitting there after the 32nd pick. And everybody's now wondering, why were they there? Who invited them? Who did everybody expect to pick them? Those kind of things. So I'm just going to jump right in. And first thing I'm going to talk about is, what is the best mindset that a player needs to have during this entire NFL evaluation process? Not just draft weekend, excuse me, but starting the morning after his final college football game. Well, it's a bowl game in mid-January, early, you know, sometime in December. If they don't go to a bowl game, he's on a losing team. He could be finished right around Thanksgiving. What is the mindset that a young man has to have? And I believe that it really is focuses on 2 things. One is that he has to focus on becoming the best version of him in every respect, not just as an athlete, not just for the Indoor Olympics, the combine, the pro day. No, he needs to be the best version of himself in every respect, whether it's dedication to his diet, whether it's getting his sleep, whether it's having positive self-talk about who he is and what's he about and what's he going to accomplish, how is he going to overcome adversity, how's he going to handle competition. It's really becoming the man that you need to be to showcase yourself against 29, 30-year-old men that are waiting for you in the locker room that don't want to go home and tell mom, hey, baby, we got to move. I just lost my job. These guys have mortgages. These guys have histories with the organization. These guys have veteran insight about what it takes to be an NFL player that the rookies don't have. And so you've got to become the best version of you. And yes, there's no doubt you want to run a fast 40. You want to do all those types of things. Jump high, jump far, be quick, be strong. But you're seeing it creep in. It used to be when somebody decided not to run at the combine, just pass on the 40, and they didn't have a ACL injury or a recent hamstring pull or something like that. They just decided to do it strategically because they thought they could be more successful and run faster at their pro day. Now you're starting to see people come to the combine and not getting looked at by the medical people, not doing a lot of interviews, not doing any of the workout. Then you're seeing players that when they show up for the pro day are electing to only do certain things at their pro day, even though they didn't do them at the combine, they're not doing them at all. So compare and contrast the NFL, which holds their draft, you know, 4.5 months after most players and prospects finish their last college football game. Compare that to the WNBA. This past month, Caitlin Clark and all the ladies that were drafted by the WNBA finished the Final Four, competed in March Madness, and a few weeks later, they're getting drafted. They didn't have a combine. They didn't have a long, drawn-out process. And in the NFL, you've got All-Star games, you've got the combine. You've got pro days, you've got pre-draft visits, you have Zoom calls, you have medical rechecks. You have all these opportunities for teams to scrutinize the prospect about things that have nothing to do with football. In the WNBA, it's all about basketball. I'm sure there's interviews, I'm sure there's some scrutiny in some respects, but it's not as intensive, it's not as intrusive, and it's all relevant because the WNBA is looking at what can this athlete do on the court, where in football, they're looking at a lot more things. And I think that's why sometimes the NFL gets it wrong. You know, overanalysis, paralysis. They scrutinize the players sometimes too much so that they talk themselves out of taking the player that they should take. That's why every year, I mean, it's Puka in 2023. Settle the rookie records as a receiver for the Rams. I think he got drafted in the 5th round. Everybody's, you know, saying in the redraft, if they did a 2023 redraft, he'd be a top 10 pick. How does that happen? I mean, what did they miss? Was he just not that good in college at BYU? I mean, how did that happen? And it happens all the time in the NFL. And it's because they put such an emphasis on prototypes, projections, ceilings. If I haven't seen the word 100 times, the word ceiling 100 times, and just kind of watching what draft prognosticators and front office people are saying about prospects, I haven't seen it once. I can tell you from a pro mindset perspective, it's great if a guy's ceiling is high, but I want to know what his base is. I want to know what he's doing now. Yes, maybe with more coaching, more emphasis on ball, not having to go to school, being 100% into his job, being a professional athlete. Of course, there's a possibility and an expectation that the player should improve. but I think it's unreasonable to put a lot of value into a player having a higher ceiling. You know, just look at the quarterbacks. You got some guys that are 21. You got some guys that are 24. Take Michael Penix. Goes to the national championship game. Had a couple really good receivers. Had a fantastic offense. But because he's 24, he's done. He's not going to get better. He's had a couple of ACL injuries. Oh, my God. He'll probably never be able to walk. The reality of it is he might be the best quarterback in the entire draft. Time will tell. I'm not going to say who. I don't know who's. I have no idea. I just wouldn't bet against him. Being 24 from the scout's perspective is a negative. From my perspective, it's a positive. More mature. He's gone through some adversity. Has changed schools. Been in a couple systems. Obviously, he figured it out. University of Washington's probably never had a better quarterback than him, especially over the last 2 years. I don't think anybody, I don't know the specific history of the Huskies, but I doubt if there's ever been a quarterback that's accomplished more in the last two seasons than Penix did. So with that being said, the best mindset is to become the best version and then to look and then to hope for the best fit. Players don't get to choose the teams. The teams choose the players. Even if you go back to Eli Manning, who didn't want to play for the San Diego Chargers at the time, was drafted anyway by the San Diego Chargers in 2003. And then because they knew he didn't want to play there, they did a trade with the Giants and ended up with Phillip Rivers. That being a win-win for both organizations, but that is the exception, not the rule. Interestingly, I saw that the Washington Commanders brought in about four quarterbacks last week, all at the same time, meeting with the coaches, meeting with the front office, doing different things, going to Topgolf, seeing how they all respond and react to each other. Who's the alpha male? When you put four people in a room, can't have four dogs. Doesn't work. Somebody rose to the top. Somebody kind of played small. Those are observations that the Washington Commanders got to observe. But the behind the scenes is there could have been a player, either through his agent, told the team he really doesn't want to play there. So Jaden Daniels is supposed to be, you know, number two. Nobody's number two until number two's card's been taken up there. And we don't even know which team's going to pick number two. We just assume it's going to be Washington, but they could trade out of that position. But who's to say that maybe somebody doesn't want to play for Washington and they've made it known to their general manager, made it known to their head coach? I can tell you right now, if I'm a head coach or I'm a GM, I don't want that kid. All those guys are pretty similar. All those guys have shown a lot in college. I want somebody that wants to be there. So if there is somebody that's made those kind of comments, you're going to see a trade out, trade down. You're going to see a surprise pick. Could happen at number one, too. I doubt it will, but it could happen. Caleb Williams could, the Bears could move down a spot, acquire a bunch of draft capital. Washington's in the one hole. Washington picks Caleb Williams. Caleb Williams is from, I believe, Dematha, which is a suburb of that high school, is a suburb of Washington, D.C. He's going back home. And the Bears get to pick somebody that wants to be in Chicago. So those are some of the things that happen behind the scenes that as fans and even the media has no idea unless somebody leaks it. And it doesn't get leaked, if it does get leaked, until after the draft when a team's made a move that nobody expected them to make. The other thing I would recommend for a player related to his mindset for this draft evaluation process is all you can do is be the best you can be. And when you read that your hands are too small, you only have an average arm, I'm talking about quarterbacks now, but it's all positions, doesn't matter who you are, what position you play, all you can do is be you. There's somebody out there. There's a team out there. And when you get those comments and the media critics about media criticism and commentary about, oh my God, you know, this guy's not, he's not, his arms aren't long enough, or whatever it may be. as a player, you just have to hope you don't go to those teams. If they put such a premium on long arms and you don't have long arms, I hope you don't get picked by the team, because it's just a recipe for failure. If you get picked by a team that doesn't really give a damn about the measurables and they care more about you as a football player, that's where you want to go. So at the end of the day, you're looking for the best fit. As an athlete, you're looking for the best fit. You're looking for positional fit. You're looking for scheme fit, organizational fit. And probably most importantly, you want to go somewhere where an organization has a vision for you and their program into the future. And what I mean by that is, if things don't go great, let's say you have a minor injury in training camp as a rook, they don't care. They do care. They don't want you getting hurt. But if you do get hurt, they're going to be patient with you because they have a vision for you into their future. And that's where you want to go. I'm going to shift gears. What is the best mindset for a player? Let me restate that. Let's get into the nitty gritty. What is the real experience and thinking of an NFL prospect during draft weekend? Tomorrow night, this is releasing on Wednesday of draft weekend. The first round for 2024 is on Thursday night in Detroit. They're going to call 32 guys' names. Well, what I can tell you is that there's conversations that take place between players and agents that people aren't privy to. Certainly, there's conversations between the players that are at home and their parents, their mom, their dad, their friends, their girlfriend, that none of us have. We don't have access to that. But I've been there. I've been there as a dad. I've been there as an agent. And I can tell you that from an agent perspective, agents tell players best case scenarios. Tell them to be prepared for worst case scenarios, but nobody wants to be the Debbie Downer. Nobody wants to be the Karen that says, hey man, you may not go the first day. No, you're telling the young man, hey, hold on to your dream. Be ready. Answer your phone. Make sure your phone is 100% charged and juiced up. And think positive thoughts, because tonight could be your night. Especially if you get invited, if you're in the green room and you get invited to the draft and you're backstage. The way they do it now, typically no one's not going to get drafted that's there. Of the 13 players that have agreed to go, it looks like most likely every one of those guys will be gone by the early 20s. We're not going to be going into the 32nd pick, assuming Kansas City doesn't move up or move down. And Kansas City is looking at, there's one guy there, but we don't want him. And they're not worried about who's in the back room anyway. They're going to pick who they want to pick. And the NFL's trying to avoid that. So I don't see that happening. And then, you know, from a player perspective, the way players respond in situations like that is, I got you, man. I got you. I'm good, man. I believe. It's my destiny tonight. Okay. And then for the players that are at home, this is very interesting. It's like they want to have a party, but they don't really want to have a party, but they really do want to have a party. And then when the party gets started, when the party planning starts, it always gets big. It always gets a lot bigger. Oh, let's have some close friends, close family members. No, next thing you know, it's the whole neighborhood. Okay. And everybody shows up. And then the players, like, you know, excited that there's a support system, you know, just having all those people that, you know, his Pop Warner coach, his middle school coach, his high school coach is showing up. He's got people that maybe he hasn't stayed in touch with in a minute. They all show up because when that player gets drafted, it's everybody's got a piece. Everybody had a part. Everybody contributed and supported that young man in some form or fashion throughout his football career. So they all want to be there to celebrate. And then as the draft goes on, let's take a guy that doesn't go as high as he's expected. You know, let's say he expects to go in the second round. The second round's over. He's like, man, it's going to happen in the third. You know, he's hyped up. You know, and then there's a team that maybe he went to a visit for, maybe they had a Zoom call, maybe the position coach did a private workout at his college back in late March, and he's thinking this could be the one, and that team does draft somebody at his position, but it's somebody else. So then the player's starting to get a little bit annoyed, a little bit frustrated because he's not going as high as he thought he would. And then the teams that he thought would draft him are picking somebody else. And then he's like, I can't deal with this anymore. Next thing you know, he's isolating himself. I can't tell you how many times I've talked to my guys and they're in their bedrooms or they're walking down the street. There's a party going on and they're not at the party because they can't handle the pick by pick drama of not getting picked when they could get picked at any moment. And so they just isolate themselves. I don't blame them. And then they see guys get picked that they played with at an all-star game, they room with at the combine, and they're like, man, that guy didn't even love football. That guy's not as good as I am. So then you start getting this emotional baggage of, damn, this was supposed to be fun. This was supposed to be the biggest night of my life. This was supposed to be a celebration. This was supposed to be exciting. And now it's like, why did we have this party? Why do we have all these people here? Everybody asking him, hey, man, what's going on? And then he's like having conversations with his agent about, hey, what's going on? Well, any agent that's telling the truth doesn't know, because I've had guys that could be drafted in the second round and fifth round, and they went in the second. I've also had guys that could go in the second round and go in the fifth. It's just the nature of the beast. The way it works is that every single draft is its own animal. And if you repeated the draft multiple times, a player would probably get drafted in multiple various situations, different teams, different rounds, even though it might be projected as an early fourth. Just because a player's projected as early fourth doesn't mean he's going to go in the early fourth. Sometimes he's going to go in the late third. Sometimes he might go in the sixth round because there was a run on other positions. There was plenty of guys in front of him that every team that was interested in him liked other guys a little bit more. So they were patient, so they didn't have to take him. And then the player gets a phone call in the sixth round from a team, and he thinks, this is it. And the team goes, hey, man, we don't have a seventh rounder. We just used our sixth round pick. I hope you get drafted, but if you don't, we want you as a free agent. And the player's like, what the F is going on? I thought for sure I'd be drafted by now. Now I'm getting these free agent calls, these undrafted free agent calls from these teams. They must be idiots if they think I'm not going to get drafted. And it continues like that until the player gets drafted. And if he doesn't get drafted, it's like, we've got like everybody in the world that wants to be picked. Nobody wants to be, when the draft first starts, nobody wants to be the first pick. I mean, I'm sorry. Did I say that? Everybody wants to be the first pick. I want to be the first pick. What I meant to say was, when the draft starts, no one desires to be the last pick, Mr. Irrelevant. But when the last pick is the only pick left, the whole world wants to be that pick. Holy smokes, you go. So the roller coaster of emotions, the change in your perspective, it's like a 180 pivot. I absolutely would hate to be the last pick. And now everybody wants to be the last pick. And then when the last pick comes, it's like, oh my God, please God, pick me. I don't care who it is. I don't care where it's at. We don't care about sunshine anymore. We don't care about winning teams anymore. We don't care about scheme fits anymore. I just want to be picked because, oh my God, nobody wants to be left standing when the music stops and musical chairs, and that's what happens. So the thing that's interesting, besides the conversation that the player is having with his agent and the conversation the player is having with his family who created this humongous party, and the player is feeling more and more embarrassed, the most interesting conversation is the conversation the player is having with himself. He's going to go through some doubts. He's going to go through some fears. He's going to go through some anger as pick by pick comes down the pipeline. Players start, I mean, they start wondering, maybe I'm not as good as I thought I was. Maybe teams didn't like me as much as I thought they did. And some of these guys were interviewed by 20 teams at the All-Star Game. Interviewed by 5 or 10 teams at the Combine. Had dang near with him and his teammates from his college, might have had almost all 32 teams at his pro day. And everybody's shaking it up with him and patting him on the back and say, man, you're great. And yet now he might be in the latter part of the draft, 6th, 7th round, and he's wondering, man, I thought I was going to get, you know, $500,000 signing bonus. Now he's just hoping to get drafted so he gets a signing bonus. And so the turmoil, the internal turmoil that these players go through is something that the normal person, it would kill him. Because what happens is a week later, regardless of whether the player's draft in the 6th, 7th round or not drafted at all, a week later, he's in rookie minicamp. And the teams don't care. Teams don't care if you were drafted or not. They want to know what you got. So these guys have to make an unbelievable shift in their mindset, regardless of what just happened on draft weekend. So draft weekend is kind of a passageway to get there. And for a lot of young men, they think it's the finish line, but it's not. It's the beginning. It's the starting line. And when you get to an NFL team, you've got to act like a vet. You've got to be a pro. So I'm going to shift into what is the mindset a rookie has to have when he shows up at an NFL facility for his first day of work in the NFL. He's got to believe in himself. He's got to be confident. He's got to, honestly, he's got to have the energy of somebody that they expect to be there during the season. He has to have the energy consistent with that. He has to earn trust. He has to learn the playbook in warp speed. By the time he shows up, the teams have been doing their installs during OTAs. And the rookies are playing catch up the whole time. They've got veteran minicamp at the end of OTAs. Rookies are going to get some reps. Got to avoid mental errors. And then they keep you around for a few weeks to kind of integrate you in, onboard you to the NFL with the player program people. And then they send you home for a month. And then you show up for training camp. And when you show up for training camp, everything that's been installed, the players need to know it inside and out. They need to have unconscious competence. They need to know it so well they don't have to think about it. And for some players, they've never had to do that. Or they've had 4 or 5, in some cases, 6 years in the same system. So they just learned it over time. And they did have unconscious competence about their college playbook. But when you get to the NFL, they change the playbook every week. And they can't, and mental errors are unacceptable. So the mental load is a lot more once you get to the NFL than it was in college. So I'm going to shift again. What is the biggest or toughest adjustment for those rookies when they get to the NFL? As I mentioned before, there's no redshirting. You got to hit the ground running. There's not the support system you have in college. You got a support system for everything. They make sure you go to class. They make sure you show up on time. In the pros, if you don't show up on time, maybe if you're an early round pick, you might get a few more chances. But if you're a late round pick or an undrafted free agent, you might be just getting your walking papers because you didn't show up on time. The level of detail. An expectation for perfection in the pros is much higher than in college. In college, if you're a fantastic athlete and you have a mental error, they kind of let it slide. Obviously, the coaches don't want you to do it, but they got nobody better. So they kind of got to tolerate it. Where in the pros, there's always somebody better. In fact, everybody in the locker room, you look around the locker room, the other 89 guys, Everybody's got talent. Everybody's got speed. Everybody's got size. Everybody deserves to be there. And 37 guys got to go home. So it's like you trip up on things that you used to trip up on in college, you can't get away with it in the pros like you could in college. And I would say the last thing is that you have to learn by taking mental reps. In college, you don't typically have to do that. It might be, you know, maybe you only played 3 years in college. You were 3 and out. And you were such a terrific athlete, terrific player as a freshman. They throw you in. You're getting physical reps to learn the playbook. And the pros, you can't make it unless you can learn by taking mental reps, which means someone else is doing the play. You're watching him. You're listening to the play call. You're predicting and you're thinking, visualizing what you would do on the play. You're watching your teammate do what he does on the play. You're analyzing, did he do it correctly? Could you do it like that? Did he do it wrong? How would you have done it instead of the way he did it? So that when you get a rep, you've already taken that rep and you've already made the adjustment and you've already got confirmation that you did know the play. You did know the technique, or you didn't, but you fixed it. Mental reps are critical. Okay. Lastly, what I want to talk about is this NFL dance we've got going on with quarterbacks. This year, the first three teams drafting need quarterbacks. Chicago Bears have nobody on the roster that's ever started a game that I'm aware of. The Washington Commanders are just about as close. The New England Patriots traded away their starter last year. Chicago Bears did the same thing. And then you've got Denver and Minnesota that are also very high on quarterbacks. And then you've got teams like Atlanta that has a quarterback, but they want to get a quarterback in the future. The New York Giants don't know if they have a quarterback because Daniel Jones has been hurt to finish the last three seasons. Then you got the Las Vegas Raiders. They don't know if they have a quarterback. And the Seattle Seahawks want a franchise quarterback. Geno's done a wonderful job last couple years, but they want a franchise quarterback. And with the new head coach, with Mike McDaniel coming in there, this is the time for them to draft a quarterback of the future. They also have, I believe, their offensive coordinator coached at Washington. So he's got a pretty close connection and previous experience coaching Penix. So, you know, if he's lurking around late first, mid second, if Seattle is in position to make a move, wouldn't surprise me a bit if they took him. They have information and intelligence about that particular player that no one else can have. Because they've had a coach on staff that coached him on his previous staff. But what I wanted to kind of do was, through the lens of a quarterback and through the team's perspective of whether they need a quarterback or not, and then looking at how quarterbacks that have been drafted in the first round have either turned into franchise-type quarterbacks or busts. The quarterback position is the most fascinating because everybody believes you can't win a Super Bowl without one. And that's pretty much true. Even though you can have a really good quarterback and never win the Super Bowl, and you can also have a really good defense like the Ravens have had, Tampa Bay's had, and not really had a great quarterback, and they still won the Super Bowl. So nothing against Trent Dilfer and Joe Flacco, and even going back to the 85 Bears with Jim McMahon. They weren't great quarterbacks, but they got Super Bowl rings because football is a team sport, and it's more than the quarterback. It just so happens that in the NFL game today, it's very beneficial to have a quarterback that can bail you out. 13 seconds to go. You need a field goal. He can move the chains in a couple plays to get a shot on goal. And you get to continue through the playoffs and make it to the Super Bowl. That's what everybody's looking for. But just looking at, you know, 2021, the New York Jets drafted Zach Wilson number 2. Man, 2 years later, they're trading for Aaron Rodgers. And then this year, they're trying to trade Zach Wilson to get some draft capital. And I don't know how long Aaron Wilson's going to play. And I'm sorry, Aaron Rodgers is going to play. But not too many years. And the Jets are going to need another quarterback. So the Jets are kind of in a tough spot because they can't really draft a quarterback this year because they need to get weapons, either offensive linemen to protect Aaron Rodgers, or they need to get more receivers. But they really should draft a quarterback. Because if they do, he gets to learn from Aaron Rodgers, who's going to be a Hall of Famer, who's won a couple Super Bowls. And that's what they were hoping for Zach Wilson to do when they traded for Aaron Rodgers. But apparently they've given up on that dream as well. But it's like Trey Lance was number three a couple years ago. Sam Darnold was number three 5 years ago. You know, Baker Mayfield was number one. Mixed results from him, even though he got a $100 million deal from the Bucks. But it's not fully guaranteed, and it looks like it could be a two-year deal stopgap contract. Josh Rosen with the Cardinals was number 10 a handful of years ago. He's no longer in the NFL. Mitch Trubisky was number two in 2017. He's a bust. So I'm not hating on him. It's just the way it works. So you're looking at right there, top 10 quarterbacks, as like six or seven quarterbacks that have been busts, that teams went all in. The Niners drafted or traded so much draft capital to move up to draft Trey Lance, number three, to replace Garoppolo. And now Brock Purdy's the guy. So I think one of the biggest things for general managers is not to overextend on their moves. Obviously, if you feel like you're going to get fired, and the only way to save your job is to draft a young quarterback that can develop, and then you can argue with, you can persuade your owner that you're getting a rookie contract quarterback for the next 4 or 5 years, 5 years with the option clause and 6 years with the franchise tag. We got an opportunity to build around this guy when he's not costing us $50+ million a year. I get all that, but I think that the success of the draft is not the quarterback. There's no doubt if you get the right one, that's wonderful. But there's 21 other guys that are playing on defense and offense. And if I'm not saying you should try to do it like Tampa and Baltimore, but you don't have to have, you don't have to trade away the farm to try to get a franchise quarterback that there's less than a 50% chance that he's actually going to pan out. That's a crazy thing that teams right now have already accepted the idea that if they draft a quarterback in the first round, there's a 50-50 shot or maybe more that he's not going to pan out. And they're okay with that. I'm okay with that if they're okay with that. I just wouldn't move into the top five to draft a quarterback because you can't be 100% sure he's the guy. But I want you to listen to the general manager comments, the head coach comments this week, especially Thursday and Friday when they're talking about Thursday, the guy they just took Friday at the rookie, they'll have press conferences for their rookie quarterback in their facility. And they're going to talk about, this is the guy. This is the guy. This is the guy that's going to take us to the promised land. This is going to be our franchise quarterback. We got the guy we wanted. Excuse me. Everybody that drafts in the first round is going to say in the press conference that they got the guy they wanted. Which is crazy. I understand why they do it. But it's a mathematical impossibility that all 32 teams could get the guy they wanted. So what happens is everybody gets to the best guy they can, and they sell it to their fan base that they got the guy they wanted. So what I want to do this weekend is I'm going to enjoy the draft. I wish everybody Every player. My clients, everybody else's clients, all the families out there that are going to go through the draft experience, nothing but the best. And I pray that all these teams that have invested all these resources and time and money doing evaluations, projections, interviews, they have pretty extensive, they got crazy extensive processes for their evaluations. I hope they get the right guys. I hope we get the guys that are scheme fits, culture fits, locker room fits, stay healthy. But the reality of it is, January or February of 2025, there's only going to be one team that's going to win the Super Bowl. It's going to be 31 teams that are going to be competing to try to get better so they can win a Super Bowl. And in 2025, there's going to be another 7, 8, 9 teams that are going to be desperate to find a franchise quarterback. Enjoy the draft.
Hey, it's Craig Dillman, the host of Pro Mindset Podcast. I want to thank you for listening or watching today's show. And you can catch us every week on the normal social media platforms like YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and all the listening podcast platforms. I hope you enjoyed today's show. And more importantly, I hope you gained a pro mindset insight. Please be sure to rate and review Pro Mindset Podcast. And I look forward to catching up with you on our next show.